This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Have to start at that point. Don't have that other little bit there. But the change comes in a poem called Maximus from Dogtown, number 2, or December 5th, 1959, which I will open with. The sea, turn your back on the sea, go inland to Dogtown. The harbor, the shore, the city are now shitty as the nation is. The world tomorrow, unless the princes of the husting, the sons who refuse to be denied the demon. If Medea kills herself, Medea is a Phoenician wench, also daughter of the terror, as Jason, Johnson, Hines, son, Hines, sight, Charles, John, Hines, old son. The Atlantic, Mediterranean, Black Sea time is done in, done for, gone. Jack Hammond put a stop to surface, underwater, galaxy time. There is no sky, space, or sea left. Earth is interesting, ice is interesting, stone is interesting, flowers are, carbon is, carboniferous, Pennsylvania age under Dogtown, the stone, the watered rock, carbon, flowers, rills, aquarian time after fish, fish was Christ, oh Christ, pick the seeds out of your teeth, how handsome the dead dog lies, horror, X. The Mi'kmaq is where the seeds Christ was supposed to pick out. Wingers, shoik, grapevine, hoik, the Dutch and the Norse and Algonquins. He with a house on his head, she who lusted after the snake in the pond. Dogtown berries smell as the grub-beaten fish take the smell out of the air. Ayer, the tar of Dogtown, the tar, Metasia, is the angel matter not to come until Rill 3000. We will carry water up the hill, the water to make the flower hot. Jack and Jill will up Dogtown Hill on top one day. The vertical American thing will show from heaven the ladder, come down to the earth of us all, the many who know there is one mother, one son, one daughter, and each the father of him herself. The genetic is ma, the morphic is pa, the city is mother, polis, the child-made man-woman is Mary's son, Elizabeth's monogene. The monogene in collagen time, leap onto the land, the aquarian time. The greater the water you add, the greater the decomposition. So long as the agent is protein, the carbon of four is the corners. In stately motion to sing in high pitch voice the fables of wood and stone and man and woman love, and loving in the snow and sun. The weather on Dogtown is protagonic, but the other side of heaven is ocean. Filled in the flower, the weather on Dogtown, the other side of heaven is ocean. Dogtown, the under vault, heaven is carbon, ocean is Anisquam, Dogtown, the under vault, the mother rock, the diamond coal, the Pennsylvanian age, the soft coal, love, age, the soft coal, love, hung up, burning, under the city, bituminous, hot to be turned, black stone, the black chrysanthemum is the throne of creation, ocean is the black gold flower. Much too punched out. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll use that as our sort of a
opposite of a prayer oration. And instead of that,
I think I'll try rather to read some of the latter part of the book, which seemed quieter, and because they're later.
Do call it. Followed by Maximus to himself at Rhodes Phoenician, written on Bogtown, December 22nd, 1959. The filfet she looked like who called herself Lakshvastika, break her up as the lumber was broken up in the screw, the mess of it astern, and the ship, not the vessel, not fall like dead in the water. No longer the dead of winter be the birth time. The skipper out, luck out, ling out, why was she put up with so long, let in at all? The swastika broken up, the padma is what was there before one was, is there, will be, is what all issues from. The gold flower, all the heavens, a few miles up, and even with the sun out, is black. Which is followed by Maximus to Gloucester, letter 27, with hell. I come back to the geography of it, the land falling off to the left, where my father shot his scabby golf and the rest of us played baseball into the summer darkness until no flies could be seen, and we came home to our various piazzas where the women buzz. To the left, the land fell to the city. To the right, it fell to the sea. I was so young, my first memory is of a tent spread to feed lobsters to Rexall conventioneers, and my father, a man for kicks, came out of the tent roaring with a bread knife in his teeth to take care of a druggist they told him had made a pass at my mother, she laughing, so sure, as round as her face, Heinz pink and apple, under one of those frame hats women then. This is no bare incoming of novel abstract form. This is no welter or the form of those events. This, Greeks, is the stopping of the battle. It is the imposing of all the antecedent predecessions, the precessions of me, the generation of those facts which are my words. It is coming from all that I no longer am, yet am, the slow westward motion of more than I am. There is no strict personal order for my inheritance. No Greek will be able to discriminate my body. An American is a complex of occasions, themselves the geometry of spatial nature. I have this sense that I am one with my skin, plus this, that forever the geography leans in on me, and I compel backwards, I compel Gloucester to yield, to change. Polis is this. Maximus, further on, December 28, 1959. Fisherman feels rocks with Jen Douglas lying, having swum from Cressy's out to, with her sister, a kelp ledge bed split when the rock cooled, perhaps water boiled it, the bed of kelp for us to lie on, quarter low tide off Hammond's. afternoon manatee of my mind, rock picture of a beast, losel woman holding out a ladle, actually sluggish treadle up which nature climbed, wet white body dried old picture Andromeda, awash norn nurse waitress, dugong crying on the rock to be delivered of her child restored. The impossible rock pursues the husband, not me. The Poimandrus. Now I see what was up a year ago, chomping around these streets, measuring off distances, looking into records, disconsolately making up things to do, finding myself peeing under a thin new moon on Dogtown and noticing rills in the March night. These are two poems called The River. In the fjord, the diorite man obtrudes Obadiah Bruin's island on his nose. Into the granite, this inlet of the sea, to poke and jam the cut and fight the sand off, the yelping rocks, the granite he rolls as Dogtown throws its pebbles, and Mary lay among them busted. True intrusions of other rocks are not commonly met with in the granitic material. The mass of diorite is apparently of an irregularly circular form on all sides where the rocks outcrop. It is surrounded by granitite, the two entrances of the reach being the only places where it possibly has cut. These extremes are narrow and are bounded on either side by granitite, which is not porphyritic, which facts almost exclude the hypothesis that the diorite has cut the granitite, plagioclase, and hornblende. Then River 2. The diorite with the granite of the poles and the basin, fjord, the overlapping both ways, up and down in the closed wrinkle open. She was the first one to tear off her girdle to expiate, like the other who did it to make up for what had been done to Negroes, born in Texas, a third for any man, no man to be deprived, as she did take it her father was by her mother, a cold, speech-making, political woman, her father an electrical engineer, Okeanostream at the auto level let down into the flesh, sustaining, clasping, interlacing, fastening. The metric field gets carried away in the body of the effect. The Gloucester sea serpent, first seen coiled on the rocks at Cape Ann. Dogtown, the Dogtown, the mother city, the sea, city, metro, polis, her, the world, father, ocean, around, way out, the father gives a shoot, unscrew yourself, virgin, take the city out of your hair, that your own mother ever existed, the birthplace of what catches the urine. southeast wind blows over Dogtown, rain-bearing wind, well-watered, wide-enfolding Dogtown. Now the goddess of all things rises from chaos and turning like a dizzy top is grabbed by Ophion to keep herself warm, the great serpent who coils around her, enveloping the widest, wide-wandering Eurynome to his lust and couples her as she stands. Split the eggs they hatched and out tumbled all in which is living, the sun, the moon, the planets, the stars, the earth with its mountains and rivers, Dogtown and all living things, which divides the sea and the sky, Dogtown and all living things thereafter, thereafter. I tell you, it's cruel. There was the Rattler, pitch-poled over Cassius Shoals at midnight some 13 years ago in a gale of wind and came right side up and got into port safe with every man on board. No ship can live on Cassius in a storm. Sailing either side, a quarter of a mile, and there is 60 or 70 fathom of room, but right on the Shoals, which is only a few rod across, the water isn't much over 20 feet deep. Only smaller vessels can go over in calm weather. It's so shallow, kelp grows on top of the water, and when there's a blow and the big seas come in, 100 feet of water chopping down on the bottom, it's a bad place. The Rattler was headed along down the coast from Newfoundland, loaded with frozen herring. The night was black and the captain was off his reckoning. Leastways, the first thing anyone knew, a big sea lifted the vessel and pitched her forward. She struck her nose on the bottom, and just then another big one struck her fair in the stern and lifted the stern clean over the bow. Her mast struck and snapped off. With that, she went over the shoals and floated in deep water on the other side, fair and square on her keel, even though both masts were broke off to within 15 feet of her deck. The crew, of course, was down below. They said it was all over before they knew what was up. They didn't sense it at all at first. They said all it was, they were sitting there, and then they struck the deck, then came down again in a heap on the floor. They got up on deck, dazed-like, and there she was, a complete wreck. The man at the wheel was lashed, but he said afterwards when he felt her go over, he thought it was all up with him. He held on for dear life and never lost his grip as he went through the water. But it's a terrible strain on a man. He was pretty nigh gone. They took him below and did all they could for him, and after they got into port, he was laid up for a long time. He did finally come around all right. It was about the narrowest escape I've ever heard of for a vessel. They had a fair wind on the lee side of the shoal. The current was in their favor, so they worked their way off and finally fell in with a vessel which towed them home. The facts in the case are as described. The man who owned the vessel was Andrew Layton of Gloucester, and the captain who sailed her was named Burse. These three represent a combination of themselves. Like, Mr. Pester acknowledges his sinfulness in being at the Potter's House, saying, I was invited by Prit et Uc, sir, and John Stone and his wife, and was at Stone's house from whence we were fetched to the Potter's. Benjamin Felton deposed, being at Mr. Pester's. Prid said he was at Plymouth, and it was after I came from Plymouth that he was invited by Vincent, and he was there in my absence. Prid also witnessed it was at dinner that himself invited by William Vincent. Goody Hardy deposed, I saw Mr. Pester, his hose unfastened between 8 and 9 in the morning, and he seemed to me as if he had lain all night there. Goody Felton and Goody Pride also deposed. Moon rose about 11 or 12 o'clock at night. Left Goody Vincent there and Mr. Pester and nobody else. William Vincent and Harry Ware left the house at 8 o'clock. This was about November 2nd. Of old times, there was a very beautiful woman, and she turned all heads of men. She married, and her husband died soon after. She took another, and he died. Within a single year, she had five, and they all died. And they were the cleverest and handsomest there were. And she married again. The sixth was such a silent man, he passed for a fool. But he was wiser than people thought, and he figured to find out what was up with this woman. He watched her all the time. He kept his eye on her day and night. It was summer, and she proposed that they go into the woods and camp there to pick berries. When they were in, she had the idea he'd go ahead and pick the spot, and he allowed he would, only he doubled back and watched her from there out. As soon as she believed that he was gone, she went rapidly on. He followed unseen until she came to a pond among rocks in a deep, wild place in the woods. She sat down and sang a song. A great foam of froth rose to the surface, and in it appeared the back and tail of a great serpent, an immense beast. The woman, who had taken off her clothes, embraced the creature, which twined around her, winding inside her arms and legs, until her body was one mass of his. The husband watched it all, saw that the serpent let go his venom into her, and that this was what she was passing on to her husband's, to live by transferring it to others. And he passed swiftly to the camping ground and built a place for the night. He laid two beds and built a fire. His wife came. She was in earnest. They sleep together. He bade her sternly to lie by herself. She lay down and went to sleep. Three times during the night he got up to replenish the fire. Each time he called her, but she did not answer. In the morning he shook her, and she was dead. They sunk her in the pond where the snake lived. They said she went off fucking every Sunday, only she said she walked straight through the mountain, and who fucked her was the spirit of that mountain. This poem is made up of nothing but names, but I think that's no problem. A. Maximus, as of why, thinking of why such questions as security and the great white death, what did obtain at said some such point as Bowditch, the practical navigator who did use other people's monies as different from his own, isn't the actuarial the real base of life sense, and is different from usury altogether, is the thing which made all the vulgar socialization, socialism, culturism, liberalism, jazzes, jism, why I don't haven't gotten it all further. Pound, a person of the poem. Farini, Hammond, Stevens, Griffiths, John Smith, Conant's, Higginson's, Bowditch, Hawkins's, Lou Douglas, Carl Olson, Walter Burton, Fish, Ships, Fisherman, John Burton, John White, John Winthrop, Houses, Finance, Wood, Economicos, Sculpture, Marine Architecture, the Plum, the Flower, the Renaissance of Box, the Economics and Poetics thereafter, the Prior,
primitive buttocks and so forth, the savage god Agiasta Cosmos. Also curious enough, December. A coast is not the same as land. A coast is not the main. A coast means travel by horse along beaches from Saco south via Ipswich 2, crossing Annisquam, Gloucester, or by shallop, longboat across Ipswich Bay. As such, the Thatchers, minister preparing to teach, marblehead fishermen got wrecked going from the settlement at Ipswich, didn't make it around North Promontory of Cape Ann. A shore life. At the time, a frontier, woods and Indians, Penacooks from Saco south, Abnaki from Casco Bay north. How much shore so many fishermen scalped and schooners taken from Cape La Have, and particularly Cape Sable, westward Fox Island, Massacre Casco, the Wackleys, south of Freeport, Arthur Mackworth, then the Gloucester founders, founding again Portland, driven out twice and back home because Cape Ann, no Indians after the plague. Safe, as wasn't for Champlain, when 200 here, 1606, under Quihamonek, brother of Chief Olmecan of Saco, able Algonquin leaders. The same weave of interlocking pieces, La Have to Dogtown, in properties sold and cross-marriaging. Nathaniel Wharf, whose mother was a Mackworth, bought of Jocelyn, whose mother was a Kamak, and next door on Washington at entrance of Yee, or Stanwood was cut through to make back road 1717, had as neighbor William Tucker, whose grandfather was the disposer with George Cleve of all of Portland land, direct from Gorgas. Or Captain Andrew Robinson, whose sister Anne, with husband Davis of Casco, Isaac, open Dogtown, Ongee, is buried at South Thomaston because he fought Indians so successfully. Massachusetts put him up against Father Lauvergeat, and French Atlantic power gave way and went with Cardinal Richelieu out of future North American affair. One interlocking line was coast, what eastward meant, eastward from Cape Ann. Forced down, try out, go down there to Cape Sable for fish, to Casco, Falmouth, to make a new town. Ingersoll's, Ryder, Wakeley's, Coe's. Riverdale, Dogtown, proprietors of New Gloucester. These few, 1699, 40 fishermen, says the Frenchman traveler, like English on plains, 19th century, making drawings, carrying elephant guns, making safari with mountain men. And the worst still to come, war with French and Indians all along said coast until Norwich Walk, 1724, wiped out, and Father Rao dead among his notes. In said period, said schooner invented in fishing starts a new 100 years after stage fort, what John Winter had made do at Richmond's Island, Gloucester, began to make happen as coast fishing. Banks were first born as coast fishing to eastward with danger Indians. Imagine fishing in Indians. William Pulsifer of John Pulsifer, who first opened land where Jones Creek turns closest to diorite, edge of meeting with granite, escaped home and whenever heard by accident someone say Indian, would bound off into woods and hide for days in shock, because had watched five of rest of crew of vessel scalped on fishing voyage to the eastward. All this, what was once imperial European nations finding future history from Portuguese fishing grounds under nose of ice, turned in century to domestic horror, farm boys going fishing in. The information of Mr. Richard York of Gloucester, taken June 22nd, 1713, saith that on Tuesday, being the second day of this instant June, being at Cape Sable in a sloop on a fishing voyage and in a harbor called the Owl's Head with my sloop, and Mr. John Prince of said Gloucester lying by me with his sloop there, came down to the waterside about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Two Indian men dressed in French clothing with a kind of white flag on a stick, and called to us and desired us to come on shore, and said they had news to tell us, and showed a paper which they said they had from Colonel Vetch at Port Royal, and we desired them to come on board our vessel, and they said they had no cause and could not come. And after some considerable discourse with them, one of my men and one of Mr. Prince's went ashore to them in a canoe, as namely James Davis and Josiah Ingersoll, who carried a gun with them in said canoe. And when they came to the shore, the said Indians came to them and told the Indians that it was peace. And the Indians said so it was, or to that purpose, and shook hands with the men and said, now Indians and Englishmen, all own brother. They, seeing the gun in the bottom of the canoe, asked why, for, said they, we have no guns, and would have had the men throw their guns overboard. The men told them they would not hurt them with it. Said Indians desired them to go on board and fetch them some rum and tobacco. The said men asked the Indians to go on board with them, but they would not, except that one of them, fishermen, would stay on shore, and when one of the Indians would, and then one of the Indians would go on board. But neither of these two men were willing to stay, so they came on board and told us that the Indians desired to have some rum and tobacco. Then two other of our men went into the canoe to go on shore, namely Paul Dolliver and John Sadler, and I gave them a small pound of tobacco to carry and give them, and had them carry a bottle of rum with them, which they did. And when they came to the shore, one of the English, as namely John Sadler, went out of the canoe, and an Indian came with the other man on board. And as they came, the Indians kept singing until he got on board. And when he was got on board, he said, now all good friends, and asked who was the skipper. And when they told him, said Indian came and showed me a paper, but it was so much worn and dusted that we could not read it so as to make sense of it, but supposed it might be a pass, for the said Indian said he had it from Governor Vetch, and we found in it these words, be kind to the Indians. And after the same Indian had been on board a little while, the Englishman that was left on shore called on board and bade us bring the canoe on shore, and said the other Indian would come on board. Then two of our men, as namely Paul Dolliver and James Davis, went into the canoe to go on shore. And when they came off the shore, they saw two Indians with the Englishmen, and they asked them if they would go on board. And they said no, and bade them go and fetch the Indian on shore that was on board. And they came on board again and told us that the Indians would not come on board, but would have the Indian that was on board to come on shore. Then James Davis and one Josiah Lane went to set said Indian on shore and to bring off the Englishman. And as soon as they came on the shore, the Indian went out of the canoe. And as the said Josiah Lane tells me, they went to set the canoe off, but the Indians laid hold of the painter to stop them. And the other two Indians came and laid hold of the painter also, and they hauled the canoe up on shore. With that, two of the Englishmen, as namely James Davis and Josiah Lane, skipped out of the canoe into the water to swim on board. But one of the Indians came into the water and caught said James Davis immediately and brought him on shore. And the other two Indians went with the canoe after Josiah Lane. And when they came up with him, one of the Indians took his hatchet and seemed as if he was going to strike at him, but did not, but took hold of him and hauled him on shore. And when they came on shore, there were several more Indians that were come out of the bushes with their guns. And when they got the said three Englishmen together, they set them down, as said Josiah Lane and Thomby, and said they would carry them to Port Royal. Maximus letter number whatever. Chock-a-block. Once a man was traveling through the woods, and he heard some distance off a sound of feet beating the ground. He went to find the people who made the sound, and it was a full week before he came to them. It was a man and his wife dancing around a tree in the top of which was a raccoon. By their constant treading, they had worn a trench in the ground and were in it up to their waist. When the man asked them why they did it, they said they were hungry and they were trying to dance the tree down to catch the raccoon. Now the man told them there was a better way to fell a tree. A new way had come into the land, and he showed them how to cut it down. In return for which he asked the skin if they had the meat of the raccoon. So they tanned it and off he went. Another distance in the path in the forest, he met another man who was carrying his house on his head. He was frightened at first, but the man put his house down and shook hands with him. And while they had a smoke together and talked, the man noticed the raccoon skin and asked where he got it. He told him from the dancing man and his wife. This was enough to get the other started. He offered him anything for the skin and finally the house. Looking it over, our man was delighted to find it had so many rooms and such good furniture. But he said, "I never could carry it as you do." "Yes," said the man who belonged somewhere else, "just try it." And he found he could. It was as light as a basket. So he went off, carrying his house until night, when he came to a hard wood ridge near a good spring of water and put it down. Inside was a wide bed covered with a white bear skin. It was very soft, and he was tired, and he slept very well. In the morning it was even better. Hanging from the beams were deer meat, hams, duck, baskets of berries and maple sugar. And as he reached out for them, the rug itself melted, and it was white snow, and his arms turned into wings. And he flew up to the food, and it was birch boughs on which it hung. First Stephen's song. Stephen's is the carpenter. Earlier, licenses. I think in this book I have Crow's Passage. I'm not sure. Soft the wood graves, soft the wood graves, turns. Is laid down, down the boat goes out to sea. I'll fix it up and sail her out to sea. The smell of the land went 50 miles out to greet them, and the flake racks perfumed the city streets, the hills from Lower Middle and from Pleasant Street were covered with flake yards with fish. Drying in the sun, fish down to the sea. This is upward choking on Dogtown. Who was Wharf? How many rigs? What Davis days? had daughters by 1717 as their fathers had married Rose in 1690. Up into the woods as the way goes means gee to a hemlock 7 rods avenue. Down on the ground the wheel ran over my son's foot to a hemlock by Joseph Day's wall, which ran the original bound of a rock in the corner of each one of these two roads, get 'em as they were, 40 fishermen, 60 widows of revolutionary soldiers and sailors, now seafood workers, union women, and such old-fashioned men passed by out the window, driving, getting 30 weeks in to last the winter out, unemployment compensation. The world wheel down does spin. My son says, what does it look like now? It's snow. It's all white with bushes sticking through. I force the calm gray waters backward. I force the calm gray waters backward. I compel Gloucester to yield the sea serpent. I wanted her to come to the surface. I had fought her below long enough. I shaped her out of the watery mass with mushroom eyes. And the dragger, cleaning its fish, idled into the scene, slipping right across the idle water where I placed the serpent, staring as hard as one's eyes can to make the snow turn back to snow and the autos to come up to size, to stop being smaller and far away from their reality. The sea does contain the beauty, he looked at until the sweat came out of his head like the tears did. The wonder is the limitlessness of my own term, the compound to compound until the beast rises from the sea, the drifting boat. First of two, the second is by the way into the woods, Indian Lake, Otter Ponds, by the way into the woods, Indian Lake, Otter Ponds, Orient, show me, exhibit myself. The rock listens to itself non-fallaciously. There are 5 elements to be accounted for: the air, the planets, the earth and water, the Aeneid, and what lies under the earth, Pluto, plenty. The account book of B. Ellery: vessels, goods, voyages, persons, salaries, conveyances. Throng to the seashore to see Freeney walk into the water. There's a fourth. Later Tyrian business. From the diadem, morning after, hangs, no, from, this has been the two, oh, the, from the diadem hangs the 7 angels of the 3rd angel's sleep, the 7 words, morning after, as his tongue hangs, dropping eternal events, the, I'm not sure how to I got it. From the diadem hangs the 7 angels of the 3rd angel's sleep, the 7 words, morning after, God the dog of the 1st angel who adores, only after was there a soul of the world, naps, the anima mundi, bread of a dog's admirer, than which we are, as his tongue hangs, dropping eternal events, the salivating dog. Which is followed by a poem for Robert Duncan, who understands what's going on, written because of him, March 17, 1961. To go up and around Gravel Hill, the road goes southeast to Jeremiah Millet's, which is my other cane. And precisely by where his house was, shoots northeast, passing on the north side my personal orchard, where I wrote with a crabapple branch at my writing stand, stump for Michael McClure, after Don Allen and Charles Peter and David Cummings and I ran into the pile of rotting fish. On Dogtown, viz, rotting in the rills, and on Jeremiah Millet's field, on the cane, as my life rotted, said Edward Dahlberg, on my own field, assaulting my mother because she gave me the pork chops. Edward, glaring out of his one good eye to register his notice of the preference, spoiling me, the which I do here record for eternity no less, lest it be lost that a mother is a hard thing to get away from, and those who interfere in the pure sense. Wordsworth be with me in this line, whose preface is a walker for us all, who would leave art and justice behind, leave Edward Dahlberg strewn on his own wires. The next important spot is Benjamin Kinnicum's from before 1717, when five very rocky acres, 1717, who married my other writer of these woods and paths, another Englishman, non-poet, John Jocelyn, via his brother's son's daughter, Margaret. What a crazy early settlement this road into the woods did have of such as Jocelyn's. John first observed, after the strawberries all said early colonists like Higgins did note, he, see below, addition from Jocelyn. BK's a hero of my work, as on the other north road, the one went to the woodlots, I shall celebrate Ann Robinson and her husband Samuel Davis, who settled Dogtown first of all, first before even Kinnicum. Samuel Davis was at the muddy place on the north road, just where it goes sharply northeast towards its second rise, 6 1/4 acres, 1713, the date of the origin of my second town. Kinnicum and Davis lie on a transverse line directly north and south of each other, and each road beyond their respective homes is the small areas made the life of the place for the 50 to 60 years it was an overlook of the Gulf of Maine and the province of Massachusetts, way down to Le Havre, between Le Havre and Lunenburg. Nova Scotia falls into tidal rivers and meadows on which we saw fish being cured 1960 as Gloucester's meeting house green and estuary of Annisquam was when fishing was to Gloucester as fishing was to Europe then, green fields to dry the silver wealth in steady sweetening sun. So small the areas are, the distances are 2,500 feet from Kinnicum's to William Smallman's and 1,000 feet from Widow Davis's, 1741, to James Marsh. In 1727, the North Road is characterized by Joshua Elwell's house between the Davis house and what the record says the way leading by Joshua Elwell's to the woodlots divided, 1721. My problem is how to make you believe these persons who lived here then and from these roads went off to fish or bought their goods 1.5 miles further north at George Dennison's store or were mariners, sailors, and a few farmers, though farming was pasturing and actually the older generation's use of Dogtown before these younger persons chose to live there. So far, some of them went. One, John Adams, was the name he took, actually born Alexander Smith on the back road, was with Christian when said Crewe, busted Bligh, and said Smith of Dogtown's people now breed in New Hebrides. But this is romantic stuff. I promise never to leave life riding on, as Pegasus' poetry was when Hector was not yet seen, to be cut from under Muthos, lovely lying Muthos. We breed again right out of our cunt-loving, cock-sucking mouths, who breed now when species has replaced man, and nature's gone away to furnaces men shoot bodies into, and our love is for ourselves alone. I walk you paths of life I'd share with you, simply to make evident the world is an eternal event, and this epoch solely the decline of fishes. Such a decline Belus, my son's, calls her his first teacher, suggested to her husband Gordon's heaven aquarium to show what fish look like. Or it was already said, it won't be long with fish sticks. Pictures will be necessary on the covers of the TV dinners to let children know what mackerel is, a different looking thing than herrings. Oh, John Jocelyn, you. And that, you know, that goes on a way. Oh, John Jocelyn, you. On the coast of Maine, shopkeepers there are none, being supplied by the Massachusetts merchants with all things they stand in need of, keeping here and there fair magazines stored with English goods, but they set excessive prices on them. If they do not gain cent per cent, they cry out, they are losers. The fishermen take yearly upon the coasts many hundred quintals of cod, hake, pollock, which they split, salt, and dry at the stages, making three voyages in a year. Oh, Jocelyn, you notice it. When they share their fish, which is at the end of every voyage, they separate the best from the worst. The first they call, when they share the fish, which is at the end of every voyage, they separate the best from the worst. The first, The first they call marketable fish, being sound, full-grown fish, and well made up, which is, I guess that's what I was afraid of. Too bad. Well, let me try it, see if I can hit it. When they share their fish, which is at the end of the voyage, they separate the best from the worst. The first they call marginable fish, being sound, full-grown fish, and well-made up, which is known where it is clear like a lake, Well, I'll have to type in and read it to you. Friday. It's a shame. It's a nice tail end for the poems. Huh? No, they all seem. Volume is such a working place of the book. I had thought it had some sort of rises that were clear. But so, like you told me to go on, I'll see how far I can. Now, how we, I'm going to go a little further. Attempt to create it.
Now that's followed by that long Jocelyn, oh John Jocelyn, oh, is a piggyback poem on the Duncan, and is a part of it. Then it's further completion of Platt follows it. It might help to say that much of this work, as it may be obvious, and I'm just bewildered, I'm trying to present it to you, is to get that Dogtown thing so that it's packed in and sitting up there and you get out from it. Further completion of Platt. Lieutenant James Davis, 14 acres, 1717, and to share four more, 1728-9, with his son-in-law James Stanwood, all on the east side of the lower road, defining therefore that stretch. The first 10 acres, May 23, 1717, are, quote, of land and rocks between Joseph Ingerson's and Bryant's. Ingersoll and Bryant tied, as Smallman and James Stanwood is to be, to Falmouth, Portland's re-arising. James Demert, or Demeret, the other later surviving one with Ingersoll on the east side altogether, two Smallmans, married Mary Bryant and seems, therefore, as James Stanwood, to have come on, as the fishermen and mariners did, to take over earlier pasture uses of this higher land up above Mill River. For besides James Davis, his brother Ebenezer and James' own son Elias also had acres intermingled with John Day's and Ezekiel Day's. And as the Day's, but as ship owners at the head of Mill River, the Davises were, like Captain Andrew Robinson, evidence how quickly fishing came up in the first quarter of the 18th century and flushed their children into Dogtown. Ebenezer died in 1732, leaving 3,047 pounds, and Elias, coming on so fast, the guess is he was to be the strongest man in Gloucester, died at 40, and already at said age was worth 4,500 pounds, with a wharf at Canso, a fishing room, and six schooners, John, Mary, Molly, Flying Horse, and three quarters of Greyhound and Elizabeth. More on Joseph Ingersoll to follow. And on the other side of the lower road, Deacon Joseph Winslow, who bought from his father-in-law Day in 1724. It loses a little because that damn passage of Jocelyn is all that marketing and fishing on and Bostonism of the coast halfway from Dogtown down to Le Havre, so that you've got a built-in coast there with all that activity and the shuffle and the moving of the marketing as well, which I lose by having, didn't realize I hadn't typed that passage. So I guess for the reason that you must be exploding, I did this one right at that point. A prayer to the Lord, cast down like a good old Catholic on the floor of San Vitale next to Dante's tomb in the midst of the massed bast of the construction, so I can get on with it, my great white Cadillac driving through Dogtown. This poem I don't think is finished, but I never have been able to resist it. I think something's in it. Boland, who's captain of the 19th century, Boland hove to once, loaded down with pickled herring in barrels and with more lashed on deck, all having breakfast with their boots on from the boards being sprung. Mr. Boland did not believe in a vessel until her 3 inches of oak planking is loosened up. Imagine if Boland had sailed the Lady of Good Voyage on his own, or his own Boland instead of Dr. Strong and in the ocean race.
He'd have rolled down a hill in a snowstorm to arrive at the bottom where his vessel was moored. It's that two things of him that really seem to me still into all having breakfast with their boots on from the boards. You understand that the whole vessel was so open that the water was coming in as they sat in the forecastle. All having breakfast, because this captain was of such a order that he wouldn't let, and he was an enormously great skipper. All having breakfast with their boots on from the boards being sprung, Mr. Bowen did not believe in a vessel until her 3 inches of oak planking is loosened up. He'd have rolled down a hill in a snowstorm to arrive at the bottom where his vessel was moored, which he did one day in Newfoundland. Maybe we're getting out a little bit into the light, I hope so. This begins to feel where I more have been. Let me see. Gee Avenue, what I call the upper road, was the way leading by Joshua Elwells to the woodlots, 1727. And Cherry, or the lower road, was 1725, the way that leads from the town to Smallman's now dwelling house. Where is the B. Ellery Chinbat Bridge area? Well, this is again a handwritten manuscript, and it's the one I said. It's sort of the second Stevens song called A Winning Thing. The maxim is written to be a note to myself on where or whoever may find it interesting. What did Stevens do if he didn't make ships as late as 1667, when signing the oath asked of all Americans then to pledge allegiance to a new English king? Stevens is listed as ship carpenter. No wharf as such is known to have been his, though his descendants all come to play a leading part in the life of the harbor, especially his great-granddaughter Susanna, who became the mother of David and William Pierce. Stevens, though the leading citizen, is all over the cup. Was then the beach his? Was then the beach his private graving yard, or did he build it all? The question has that power in it that previously to coming to Gloucester, this man had built the largest ship then known in England, and had been so desirable Spain's spies had sought to buy him, as they had earlier tried to John Hawkins. He would have lived a life as large as John Winthrop Jr. also refused. But even colonially, Stevens dwindled on the face of the record. I'm not sure he did. He lived here on the front of the city 40 years until the day he ran away at age 70 to wherever he did go. The question stays, what did he do? Did he contract vessels for out of Gloucester? What was shipbuilding if Stevens did build to bind his coming to the later act of Andrew Robinson or Ingersoll's and Sanders? It stays that not after so much of a break in time, the type of vessel which changed fishing from that point on was built or invented in Gloucester. One would say, not out of thin air. 1713, a schooner. 1693, Stephen dies, a shipbuilder. In those 20 years, the Ingersoll's, the Sanders, and Robinson are continuing shipbuilding.
Was Stevens not the head of something, the winning thing, got hidden all the years? I was telling Phyllis yesterday, the last time I was in Canada on radio, an excellent Englishman did the research and had a beautiful text, but the announcer was a Canadian and a Hollywood type, and the first question he asked me is, what do you think of imagism, Mr. Olson? Which seemed about as... This poem, I don't know, I like this thing, but I suppose it has to do with that. Twenty-three school and 16 Columbia, myrtle and violets and wood. Backwood of the sea, grounds, fish eat on, cod bred in winter in Massachusetts Bay, went offshore with spring, then Georgia's with winter again. Ice had dropped, banks in the water, came of the bottom, fish orchards and gardens, tenements, mace swadges of the billions of generations of halibut peril, settlers' lives. Where fish go after, and Danish cylinders now descend to measure paleontological times when figureheads from East India brigantines sat in formal gardens so that old maids held their stomachers running as girls on Perth Street. The Atlantic is a bottomed Pacific. I stand on Main Street like the diorite stone. John Burke read the comics at the city council table, saying, when you guys have played long enough, there's no use of my wasting my time. Brains are not to be wasted. Ochloloidoros. Letter 72. Of love and hand holding sweet flowers and drinking waters. Hilton's and Davis, the garden of Anne and Elizabeth and Eden, and where I fall. Get back to Nasir Tusi. Man is the fallen angel, and after Davis's swamp, Joshua Elwell, sitting high in heaven. Bennett placed himself above 75 feet, Hilton above the trough between, on the edge of 75 feet too, and Samuel Davis on the height of the next rise inside 125 feet, 100 feet lying almost exactly the middle of the 600-foot distance between his and Hilton's houses, and Joshua Elwell, the other rise on the Commons Road, or to the Woodlots, 1727, on the other side of the second trough at 125 feet. Thus, three hills or hardbacks and two brooks characterize the upper road as against the lower or Dog Town Road proper, where moraine and the more evident presence of rock tumble gives the road and center its moor character, moonscape, and hell. The commons is
garden and manna, ground rose and candle, shapes of spruce and bayberry garden. Ta matura, meatier things, after the weather, the parsons' field. Descartes, soldier in a time of religious wars, a map of Dogtown, St. Sophia, fisherman's field, fisherman's 2 acres on which to dry cod via racks in a field like snow, fences or tables at a lawn party, and ladies in boots who wear cloths to keep the sun from burning their necks. Their neck, that's the emphasis. And ladies in boots who wear cloths to keep the sun from burning their necks.
It isn't so terribly late. We're coming to a good break.
Yeah. If it's worth going on.
We've got plenty of time.
Yeah. In the interleaved almanacs for 1647 and 1646 and 1647 of Danforth, 1646, August 1, the great pears ripe. 3, the long apples ripe. 12, Blackstone's apples gathered. 15, tankard apples gathered. 18, Cretonne pippins, long red apples gathered. 1647, July 5, we began to cut the peas in the field. 14, we began to shear rye. August 2, we mowed barley. The same week we shear summer wheat. 7, the great pears gathered. September 15, the russetons gathered and pear mains. 1648, May 26, sown 1 peck of peas, the moon in the full. Observe how they prove. July 28, summer apples gathered. 1646, July 20, apricots ripe. This is another sort of longish. That same line. I think I'll read this originally written. I got a note here, question October 1962, that end is here. And at this point, where I'll hold up my hand and rest, too poetic. Alexander Baker on the river bank above Dunfudging, 1635 and 245. His age, 28 to 38, and having by wife Elizabeth in those years 5 children. Certainly the earliest known births, Gloucester, except for Conant children, Woodbury, Balch. Stage 4, 1623-4 to 1626-7. Alexander, born Dunfudging, January 15, 1635-6. The father and mother had arrived Boston in midsummer aboard the Elizabeth and Anne, Captain Roger Cooper with two first children, Elizabeth, age 3, and Christian, age 1. Thus, Alexander Baker, 2, possibly first child, Gloucester, among the persons of the incorporation of the town. Samuel, born January 16, 1637, 8. John, June 4, 1640. Joshua, from whose blood Ethan Allen, born Gloucester, April 30th, 1642. Just about day Endicott and Downing divided Gloucester up, and Hannah, September 29th, 1644. Sometime after her birth and before October 4th, 1645, date the mother and father are admitted, Boston Church. The Bakers sold out at Dunfudging to George Ingersoll from Salem. Ingersoll was still in Salem, date his father's will, 1644. One has then a placement. A man and family was on the river just above the cut by 1635 and for 10 years. Also probably his neighbor Stephen Streeter may have been there that early. In any case, as Goodman, Baker, and Streeter, the two get referred to in jointure the moment the town is found. And curiously, their adjoining property is picked up from them by another pair equally holding together Gloucester for similar year, 10 years, Ingersoll and Keeney, though each leave Dunfudging quickly for the harbor. Each is possessed of a front on Fuller Street and the water by 1647, December. Baker thus fixes occupation of Cape during least known years between first settlement and incorporation, as Osmond Dutch does the fisherman of the harbor front. His letter to wife Grace is from Cape Ann as notar or sailor, July 18, 1639. And Abraham Robinson, Thomas Ashley, whose property widow Babson bought up at his bankruptcy, 1642, and William Brown show via shallop as shown there, as down there on the harbor before June 1641, and fishermen specifically, Thomas Letchford, notebook page 406, and add William Southmead or Southmate as possessing Thompson Fishery, stage Duncan's Point, and therefore probably here as early as Dutch and Thomas Millward, and you have a handful who are the hidden handful from which fell the later life as though they were, yes, Alexander, Baker, Goodman, Streeter, Rosman, Dutch, William, Southmate, Thomas, Millward, Abraham, Robinson, Thomas, Ashley, William, Brown. And definitely the ministerial student Thomas Rashley, traveling from the Divinity School, which Harvard College was 1639, to hold service on Curtis Square, where a railroad cuts between burial ground and hill. So, more persons by Baker and Streeter, and other fishermen at head of Harbor Cove, Phil, Harbor and River, Phil. Quiet few originally experiencing what we have each differently known, like the mockingbird drove me hard, mocking me. If he mocks 28 different sorts of song, does a mockingbird not also mock the living person? Such curiosity must extend to looking in on the secrets of my cabinet as well as the songs of his companion birds. Like the mockingbird last night in the slow coming in of the fog, a hot night, such the creature a mockingbird is, loves heat and night. No mockingbird was here 1635, 1639, 1907 was accidental visitor from the south, meanness polyglotus, but by 1920 had increased so was becoming almost authority Dr. Townsend, a resident, and at all times of the year, F.D. Courier found them nesting at Newburyport in 1914. Four young grew to full size. A second pair nested the same year. In 1915, two pairs also nested, one in 1916 and two in 1917. February 19th, 1912, West Gloucester Observer J. Kittredge, Jr. It flies slowly in full song from perch to perch. Why the scoundrel who gave me the hard time, Cressy's Beach, that May night, 1959, seems such a pistolier.
So we have about three or four to finish that opening section, and we can therefore on Friday go for more, I think. I've never actually arrived. Of the Parsonses, these are my sort of like neighbors, these people.
Not now, I mean, but
were. And not these people I'll talk about, but I mean the families.
I pick out the garden, the spring, the well of George Henry's division with his brother, the flat stone by a cherry tree. The garden Nathaniel's deceased, when Samuel Fisherman, alias Coaster, sold it to Ebenezer Tanner about 19 rods of land called the garden, 1732. Southwesterly to a plum tree, the well, exactly opposite the Morse house on the westerly side across from the middle of it, 1 acre of rocky ground where said Solomon Parsons' house stands and is bounded, excepting Mr. John Parsons' land where his well is, and there to bound by said land as it is in no way to infringe on said well privileges, Eliezer and wife Mary May. 1736-7. Mr. John Parsons' orchard, Gravenstein, russet, screenings, and northern spies in the complex westerly of the Morse house with the well and the spring. The spring house, the Leeches' now winter home, was summer camp I went through today with Stuart and Mrs. Leech when Walter Cressy was selling water after he'd blown up the rock vein and dried the Parsons' spring to get his own, a Cressy, strong way, Walter and Neil and Bertha living it up with a pony, a goat, a sheep, a Labrador retriever while acquiring more and more of the old Parsons' woods and ledge fronting over the cut like Frontenac bearing down. Greensward is a light of the fall of ground, may not be the like of light coming off water, but land's fall causes feeling to run as spirit does from sea and sky. She said at 10 in the morning she felt she was her mother, meaning my body was hers. I went to the mirror to look if it was me and called her on the phone. She joshed me, and it was that night when she went with Josie Bone to see the chocolate soldier. She was struck by a taxi getting off the streetcar, and Josie was so scared she didn't find out what hospital they took her to. 12 hours of premonition, had not known before and never knew again. Spring Lane leads from the south end of the Morse House across the street in 8 rods westerly, it says, from the house. There a line to begin from the rock to a great rock by the spring, which is about 10 poles, leaving the spring common, thence northwesterly, and so forth. The beginnings, facts. Dutch mariner, New England coast and transport, England to Bay, 1632, along with John Gallup, who ran his pinnace back and forth to Ipswich. Babson guesses Robinson might have come across from Plymouth, 1631. 1633, anyway. Reverend Eli Forbes says, 1792, on authority, vide ancient manuscript, persons here and met to carry on the worship of God among themselves and sung psalms. The beginnings, Old Anglone, New England, 1636, Old John White to New John Winthrop urging, quote, to send on for fishing, which is the first means that will bring any income into your land. Half a dozen good boats, masters, 3 or 4 good splitters, talks John, who has known fishing since early Dorchester Company days, now getting on 13 years ago. 1637, the longer you defer fishing and use other means that may bring you in some supplies, the more you weaken your body and will ere long, and so forth. Hugh Peter Pushing, 1639, said year Gloucester gets going, stages builded, Nautas turning fisherman, Dutch example, Milward another, young Gallup maybe. March 1640, Craddock shoving at Winthrop, and then with war, England's civil war and West Indies open, further to Yankee trade come Gloucester into being, April 1642. On beam o' ledge he fell one night, and didn't walk up out of that one in his red jack, the pet child, lucky see. Shag Rock, the positive, the mythological, the world, the mundus, round, no explanation. All that happens is eternal, no examples, no proving possible. Naming, Windmill Hill and Backstreet Ridge, with the creek which ran into the sea, swinging around on the back of Back Street, and the burial ground falling that side, but the prominence going down to the harbor via the next landing of Middle Street, before the drop to Foa, the creek coming around on the west side where the ridge runs out, now Washington, like a snake. School and Columbia and Church and Short Street, streets, the prominences still shoot up the flowers of the houses of
28 schools, 16 Columbia and 12 Columbia. The cut. March 13, 1638, 9, to view whether it may not be cut through. December 10, 1641, the day that cut the beach between Cape Ann and Annisquam shall have the liberty to take sufficient toll for 21 years. Sheria, island near Miletus and below Scamander, on the river, Hercules or Athena, bald-headed clerks and so forth hauled hair via hair rope the statue into place. My carpenter's son sends will, Lieutenant William Stevens, 1701, inventory 1712-13. A certain privileged place called a cut where vessels pass through for money. £34.10. Comparison for value. House, sawmill, barn, £74. And Maximus at the harbor. I now suffer some loss for not opening with the first three poems before the one I opened with. But that's the Maximus from Dogtown, which has been in print, and just a few little ones. But the end poem of this is Maximus at the harbor. Okeanos rages, tears rocks back in his path. Encircling Okeanos tears upon the earth to get love loose. That women fall into the clefts of women, that men tear at their legs and rape until love sits through all things and nothing is except love as stud upon the earth. Loves to sit in the ring of Okeanos, loves to lie in the spit of a woman, a man to sit in her legs. Her hemispheres loomed above me. I went to work like the horns of a snail. Paradise is a person come into this world. The soul is a magnificent angel. And the thought of its thought is the rage of ocean. Apophanus thigh roared the great bone onto Norman's woe. Apophanus thigh as it blew a pool on round rock shoal. Apophanus thigh it cracked as it broke on pavilion beach. Apophanus thigh it tore at watch house point. Apophanus thigh got hidden all the years. Apophanus thigh, the soul in its progressive rise. Apophanus thigh passes in and out of more difficult things, and by so passing, Apophanus thigh, the act which actuates the soul itself. She loomed before me and he stood in this room. It sends out on the path ahead the angel it will meet. Apophanus thigh, its ascent is its own mirage.